Chapter 1. Your Greatest Weakness in Negotiation. The Dangers of Neediness. Why are the tiger's eyes set in front of the head, facing forward? Because the animal is a predator, always on the lookout for prey. Why are our own eyes also set in the front of the head, facing forward? Because we are predators as well. Watching children at a playground is delightful, but it's also cautionary, as every parent knows, because we see the king of the hill, one-upmanship, bullying, competitive instincts emerge at a very early age. These instincts last a lifetime, as anyone who has spent much time in a nursing home knows. They accompany some of us right to the grave. This is a harsh truth with which to begin the first chapter of this book, but it's a vitally necessary point. Like all predators, we humans often take advantage of the fear-racked, the distressed, the vulnerable, the needy. We're capable of wonderful altruism as well, but we don't find too much altruism in the business and negotiation world, despite all the sweet talk of some cagey win-win negotiators. In a negotiation, dog-eat-dog may not do justice to the hidden ferocity. In your life as a negotiator, even in your life as a private citizen of the world, you're dealing with some serious predators who are looking for the slightest sign of distress and neediness. It is absolutely imperative that you, as a negotiator, understand the importance of this point. You do not need this deal, because to be needy is to lose control and make bad decisions. How vulnerable are you to predators when you lose control? Very vulnerable. I'll illustrate the point with the movie To Walk with Lions, starring Richard Harris, and set in East Africa, naturally enough, where the character played by Harris has many friends among the animals, including a certain lion. One day, Harris slips and falls on a hillside, and the lion is on him in a flash. Harris manages to fire his gun and scare the lion away, but he doesn't shoot him because he's always known and never forgotten that the lion is a predator first and foremost and will behave like a predator when given the opportunity and sensing weakness. Every animal trainer knows the same thing. With a predator, it's all about power. Many negotiators are the same way. Many win-win negotiators are the same way. When I cover this subject in workshops and seminars, some people seem to think that I'm exaggerating about this neediness business. I am not. In fact, if I polled my clients over the past years to name the one idea of my system that had the greatest and most immediately beneficial impact on their negotiating work, I'm pretty sure that a plurality, maybe even a significant majority, would identify this simple warning about neediness. With experience, they've learned that neediness can have, will have, a dramatic, always negative effect on their behavior. You must overcome any neediness at the negotiating table. Neediness comes in many varieties. Perhaps the category of negotiation in which this neediness dynamic is most powerful and dangerous is the straight retail sales negotiation, in which the golden rule of business is the implicit understanding of both sides, the one with the gold rules. In Western culture, we see ourselves as buyers, don't we? We proudly buy and consume as much as we can. The salesperson, on the other hand, has a problem with his or her self-image. The very term sales is being replaced in many fields by business development, because the image of the salesperson is that of the huckster on the street, almost. More important, the salesperson is definitely the dependent party in the negotiation. He or she must be prepared to give, to compromise, while the buyer takes everything he or she can get. After all, the buyer can go elsewhere in most cases, but the poor seller needs this deal. The self-image of the individual in the selling role traps him or her in a neediness mode and often leads to bad deals. Tough negotiators are experts at recognizing this neediness in their adversaries and expert in creating it as well. Negotiators with giant corporations in particular will heighten the expectations of their supplier adversaries, painting rosy, exaggerated scenarios for mega orders, joint ventures, global alliances, all for the purpose of building neediness on the part of their adversary for this once-in-a-lifetime career-making deal. Then, when the neediness is well established, they lower the boom with changes, exceptions, and a lot more. Demands for concessions, all of them. Throughout this book, we'll see in ugly detail how this works. Sometimes, however, the buyer, not the seller, finds himself in the potentially needy position. A classic example from history is the Lewis and Clark expedition. When these intrepid explorers really needed fresh horses, the Native Americans somehow knew this. If the local residents were negotiating to sell less valuable and necessary goods, they came to quick agreements. But when they were selling vitally needed horses to the explorers, they pitched their teepees and settled in for the long haul. They were instinctively tough negotiators. The journals of Lewis and Clark are excellent reading for any negotiator, because these two great Americans encountered dozens of unusual negotiating situations. Sometimes Lewis and Clark were needy, plain and simple. Sometimes they really were desperate for horses and other supplies. Today, in the 21st century, we're not needy. We're just not. But we nevertheless still hear people say, "I need this jacket," or "I need this car," or "I need to make this call," or "I need this job," or "I need to talk to you," or "I need this deal." We use the word need much too casually. The only things we truly need are the basics of physical survival: air, water, food, clothing, shelter. And everyone reading this book already has these. We also need the basics of intellectual and emotional well-being: love, family, friendship, satisfying work, hobbies, faith. Each reader has his or her own list here. But it's a short list, and it does not, or should not, include the $500 jacket or the $100,000 car, because there are other jackets and other cars. It should not include this particular job or sale or deal, because there are other jobs and sales and deals. Nevertheless, neediness is everywhere. Let me tell you the most instructive experience on this subject I've had in my own life. The time is oh dark 30 hours, military lingo for early a.m., on a cold, damp, foggy January morning in West Texas. This is the first morning on the flight line for my group of fighter pilot trainees. The room is full of young men, all second lieutenants, dressed in new green flight suits and black high-top boots, waiting for the flight commander. In walks Major Dave Miller, slightly gray at the temples, the perfect specimen of a fighter pilot, a veteran of the Red River Valley in Vietnam, site of some of the most intense aerial combat in history. "Attend! Hut!" We jump to our feet and stand ramrod straight. In a deep, confident voice, he commands, "Seats!" You never saw men sit down as quickly as this group did. Immediately, he says, "Lieutenant Camp!" I'm startled, but gather my wits as best as I can, leap back up to attention, and answer, "Sir, yes, sir!" Dave Miller says, "You've just taken off. You're 300 feet above the ground and climbing." Instantly, everything goes quiet. You feel like someone's putting on the brakes. Your airspeed is at 250 knots and slowing. You suddenly realize both engines have quit. What are you going to do? My mind goes blank, and my heart goes into orbit. It seems like forever, but then I hear myself say, "Well, sir, which runway am I on?" And believe it or not, I proceeded to debate this man, a seasoned veteran, my teacher, about how I should have handled that hypothetical situation. The correct answer to Miller's question was eject. Eject? He must be out of his mind. I'd never ejected in my life, never even considered it during my prior training. And on that morning, I never considered that Miller was trying to save my life while I was trying to show off by arguing that I could make it to a certain runway. There's another word for all that early chutzpah and ego on my part. Neediness, plain and simple. In that negotiation with my instructor, I needed to be a top gun, to know it all, to be right. Sometimes neediness is blatant and easy to spot, as in that flying story, but more often it's subtle and insidious. The trained negotiator sees neediness of all sorts all the time, in big ways and in little ways. It is so easy to slip into such a state, often without even being aware of it. Think about something as simple as a greeting. Hi, I'm Frank Jones. Hello, Mr. Jones. Each subtle subservience puts you at an immediate disadvantage. You have conceded that Frank Jones is top gun in this room, and he knows it. You're ripe for the picking. So call him Frank instead. Consider this appeal for an appointment. Mr. Smith, this is Bob Jones. I'm with First Advantage Venture Fund, and I want to see if I could get 10 minutes on your calendar so I can show you how we can work with you in the future. Remember, new companies aren't the only parties who can be needy. Some startups are well-funded and choosy regarding any venture capitalist they may bring in. The investors can also get into the needy mode, just as Bob Jones did, while more or less begging for this appointment. Bob should have said, Bill, my name is Bob Jones. I'm not quite sure that we as a venture fund fit where you're going. I just don't know. What I'd like to do is meet with you so we can see where you're going and you can look at where we're going at First Advantage and see if there's a fit. When's the best time on your calendar? No talking. Talking can be an overt showing of need. This is why no talking is one of my rules. An exaggeration, of course, but I make it a rule to make the point. Talking and showing need go hand in hand. One of my best students started out with an insatiable desire to make sure his voice was heard. This guy was bright and always wanted people to know that he was as informed and on top of things as anyone in the room. He needed to feel important. Okay, thought his shrewder adversaries, we'll be happy to let you feel important as we skin you alive. This is a common issue that hard-driving alpha male types have to deal with daily. They want to know it all, or short of that, they want to be seen to know it all. The adrenaline kicks in. The neediness becomes a biochemical fact. Then the neediness becomes a biochemical addiction. It's true. One of the most effective life insurance salesmen I ever saw was a man in a wheelchair who could not speak. He used a marker and a board to communicate, patiently writing out his questions. I would not wish this man's disability on anyone, but his only means of asking questions was a terrific advantage in his profession, as he was the first to acknowledge, because it's hard to be needy while sitting in a wheelchair calmly writing out questions by hand. His most effective question, by the way, if we lose you, where will your family live? How many people do you know who won't let you get a word in edgewise? By being overbearing, these people are actually betraying neediness. I've even heard an overbearing, needy, outgoing message on an answering machine. Normal is, Hi, this is so-and-so, please leave your message at the beep. Instead, this individual greeted the caller with a detailed message regarding his schedule for the hour, the day, the week, and I think we can imagine what kind of messages this person left on other people's answering machines. Long ones. She needed to make sure you understood how busy she was, how competent she must be, how lucky you would be if she could spare you the time of day. But it's all counterproductive. It's just annoying. Now think for a moment about cold calls and warm calls, because they're the ultimate lesson on this subject. Just thinking about cold calls gives the average person chills. It's tough, no doubt about it, and a lot of fine people just won't do it. Cold calling is the worst way to do business, we all know that. But I say it's also a great way, because it's a great training ground, and it can be surprisingly effective because your neediness is under control. You have no great expectations, that's for sure, and your discipline is keen. You start off by saying something like, Well, Mary, I have no idea whether what we do has any relevance for your business, I just don't know, maybe it doesn't. If not, just tell me and I'll be on my way. But if whoever handles your market research, and off you go. Or not. It doesn't matter. Your neediness is under control. A cold call is just another negotiation, no more and no less. And by the end of this book, you'll understand how to handle a cold call according to the same rules and habits as you would handle any other negotiation. The same holds for a warm call. Hey, Tom, this is Bill. Man, do I have a hot one for you. I told them all about you, what you do. They're on the tee. They're ready. All you got to do is call and then collect. You owe me one, buddy. Oh, yeah? Tom's blood is racing, but he might be better off with a cold call than with a reference like that one. If he's not careful, he'll lose discipline, start thinking about the payday, get excited, become needy. That's when defeat may be snatched from the jaws of victory. Do yourself a favor. Treat every warm call as though it's the coldest one you ever made. When emotions run hot and heavy in negotiations, the high-pitched voice is a sure sign of need. The rushed delivery is another sure sign. While needy negotiators raise their voices, negotiators under control lower their voices. So lower your voice in times of inner turmoil. Slow down. The Third World Bazaar offers classic lessons on neediness, as I learned myself while Christmas shopping in Saigon in 1967, holding about $100 with which to buy presents for my whole family. My grandparents were very special to me, and I thought about them when I found in the same shop two beautiful pieces of lacquerware and a small boat carved from a water buffalo horn. Mama-san said she wanted 1,000 piastres apiece, about $10 or $30 total. I wanted all three in the worst way, but this was way too much money, and I said so. I was too young and naive to be employing any negotiating strategy, and I didn't want to be the powerful, ugly American, but I couldn't buy them. As I started to leave, Mama-san chased after me and said she'd sell them for 800 piastres each. And I said, no, it's still too much. I shopped elsewhere, bought some nice things and some trinkets, but I still had nothing for my grandparents as I was walking past the little shop with the lacquerware and the carved boat. When Mama-san saw me with the packages, she grabbed me and said, "Oh, you number one GI, you buku shop!" She urged me back inside, where she offered to part with each of the three items for 500 piastres apiece, but this was still too much. "No," I said, "I'll give you 400. That's all I have." She said, "Okay, GI, I sell you for 400. I wasn't needy. She was. But if she'd been a camp-trained negotiator, she'd have asked me, setting aside the language problem, "Who are these for?" When I answered, she would have whistled and said, "Why would you want to spend so much money on them? A lot of money for grandparents." She would have shown no need while building my need. She'd have laid a guilt trip on me. Money's not a factor when it comes to my grandparents, and I'd have paid 1,000 piastres, or darn close to it, because I really loved my grandparents. Don't worry about rejection. Fear of rejection is a sign of neediness, specifically the need to be liked. It is imperative for the negotiator to understand just what rejection is and who can reject you and who cannot. Here's the key point. Your adversaries in a negotiation cannot reject you. There's nothing you need from them, so how can they reject you? It's impossible. The parent can reject the child because the child certainly needs the parent. The spouse can reject the spouse. The teacher can even reject the student in the early grades when the boy or girl truly does need this teacher. But can your adversary in a negotiation really reject you? They don't have any such power. Never, never allow them to believe that they do. The serious negotiator understands that he or she cannot go out into the world spending emotional energy in the effort to be liked, to be smart, to be important. This negotiator wants to be recognized as being effective and businesslike, that's all. She spends her energy on the task of business. She has no need for the rest of it. But how often we fall into this particular neediness trap? In labor management relationships, a key tactic of management is to find union members who want a boost to the ego and can therefore be made to feel needy. Such members can be manipulated until they're double agents for the management, in effect, passing on contrived information, telling their own union members, "Our committee is getting us killed. I've got buddies in management. That's what they tell me. They might shut this plant down if we keep on like this." I speak both from personal experience of many years ago, that labor management dispute, and from my coaching experience, as I've seen negotiating team members undermine their own team in a host of ways. They leak valuable information, bring back false information, break their team's resolve, urge unnecessary compromises, all because their neediness to be smart, to be liked, to be important is turned against them by the clever adversary. Off the top, I could name a dozen well-paid management professionals for Fortune 500 companies who were, in effect, working for their adversaries in big-time negotiations. I know because these adversaries were my clients. I can name an almost-at-the-top executive whose neediness for a deal to use as a stepping stone to the chairmanship made him agree to a totally unnecessary compromise. The eventual deal camouflaged that compromise, but that's what it was. I know because the beneficiary of that ridiculous compromise was my client. A few years ago, I took on a corporate client who had just lost a large deal with a multinational after my new client had compromised in every way imaginable. They had the best technology to start with, and on top of that, they offered the best price, the best terms, the best delivery dates, the best service, the best everything. If they could compromise on any element of the negotiation, they did. They even tossed in a free piece of very expensive equipment, no strings attached. But the multinational walked away from this steal of a deal. Why? We finally found out that their CEO was wary precisely because the company that was now my client had compromised too much. Something must be wrong, he thought, for a company to show so much need. That cannot be a competent, trustworthy company. They'll never be able to deliver. And that CEO was right. My new client would never have been able to make good on the commitments negotiated in that deal. Wanting is fine. Needing is not. The next time you watch one of the predator-prey nature shows on public television or one of the wildlife channels, watch the chase scenes carefully. There are always one or two in which the lion or the cheetah is not successful, and each time the scenario is the same. The predator gets closer to the prey. Closer, closer, then slips back slightly and immediately gives up, on the spot. When the distance to the prey begins to widen, the hunter quits. She, the females do most of the hunting, will never waste energy on a losing cause. She saunters off, because it doesn't matter. There are other wildebeests, other gazelles. Likewise, the trained negotiator has no needs, because it just doesn't matter. There are other deals. Turn the page on this one. Let it go. I mentioned in the introduction one of my ironclad rules. No closing. The context was a discussion of the dangers of win-win and how win-win implicitly urges you to focus on what you cannot control, the end, while losing sight of what you can control, the means. Now I'll add the point that urgent closing betrays neediness on your own part. You need to close. No, you don't. But maybe your adversary does. The personal experience of every single reader of this book reveals the dangers of the trick closing. When someone has tried to close on you too quickly, and someone has in one context or another, unless you're still a babe in arms, you instinctively reacted in the negative. Nothing. But nothing will blow a negotiation faster than such a rush to judgment. Why? You had a vision of neediness, which makes anyone feel uncomfortable emotionally, and which also serves as a warning to look closer at this deal. More bad deals are signed and more sales are lost because of neediness than because of any other single factor. If there's any need in this negotiation, it has to be your adversary's, not yours. You will never achieve the level of success with which you're capable until you understand and live this concept. We negotiators, we humans, show our neediness in many, many ways. To recognize your own varieties, all you really have to do is stop and think about what you're doing and what the underlying motivation is. No one knows better than you when your neediness is showing its true colors. When you stop to consider, it's amazing how much in our lives that we get so worked up over doesn't matter. Not really. As a negotiator aspiring to excellence, you must at all costs avoid showing need. In order to avoid showing need, you must never feel it. You do not need this deal. But what happens if we simply substitute the word and the emotion want for need? The dynamics change. What picture comes to mind when you read the words, I want? I see a bright red Porsche convertible with a black top and interior. What's your picture? As good negotiators, the word want means something we work for, strive for, plan for, but it is never confused with need. Sure, I want this global alliance with Humongous Incorporated, but I don't need it. I want the car, but I don't need it. I want the house, but I don't need it. It'll be their loss, not mine, if any of these deals falls through. Either way, I'll sleep tonight, and I'll eat tomorrow. Camp-trained negotiators never show need, only want. Need is death. Want is life. Believe me, this different attitude will be instantly perceived by the folks on the other side of the table. Confidence and trust go up across the board. Control and discipline go up for you. I hope I haven't sounded like a broken record, or should I bring myself up to date and say CD in this chapter, but I can't say this too often. Overcome all need.